We have with us today David Van Gilder, Senior Policy and Legal Director for Hoosier Environmental Council, and we're going to be profiling some of the bills they have on their bill watch, legislation coming through the Indiana General Assembly. Why don't we start off with one that you guys are for, the single-use food service, HB 1302?
Right. This is one that, unfortunately, because it's proposed by Sue Arrington from Muncie, a very stalwart environmental advocate, but also happens to be a Democrat in the super minority, is not likely to go anywhere. But we support it because we think it's a bold move. It's one that I think a lot of people talk about, especially in the food service world, in the fast food or fast casual food world, about how to eliminate a lot of the waste. And this seems like a very simple way to do that, which is you can't fill the bag at the drive-through with plastic stuff. People have to ask if they want a straw or they want a plastic, and you have to find alternatives. So hopefully this bill will get introduced every session until somebody gets some good sense about them.
And that provides that a restaurant or food service shall provide only a non-plastic single-use item when they do, I guess?
Right. So, you know, bamboo, there's a lot of cornstarch component kind of silverware and bamboo and things that are not plastic. And that's what it requires.
Since you started off with something you think may not even quite make it to the floor, there were some other bills that did not advance. Or do you want to address any of those that didn't get anywhere?
Well, let's see. On our list, other ones that didn't advance.
Yeah, water and wilderness protection.
Yeah, there's HB 1447, the state forest one, that was proposed by a Republican, Dave Hall, and it hasn't advanced so far, but there's some ideas about how it might find some legs again in the other chamber, in the Senate chamber. The idea there is that you take a look at your state forests and you direct the Division of Forestry to identify old forest. We're not talking about like old growth or some sort of term of art that the U.S. Forest Service might use, but we're talking about older, more mature areas of the forest. And then you set aside those areas, and it might be as much as 10% of the total state forest area, and you restrict some of the usual activities that could happen on state forests, like logging. There's a companion bill that Senator Yoder introduced. It's not in our bill watch, but and I'll find the number for it here in just a second. Senator Yoder's bill is SB 321. Much more specific, it basically named areas and delineated areas within all the state forests that could be set aside like this. Same idea, which is to set aside areas of state forests that shouldn't be logged, should be reserved for quiet uses, contemplative uses, serene walking, that kind of thing. And that's really the idea of both these bills.
But basically, they're not getting out of committee and for this session?
Or you well,
you might go to the other house?
Yeah, on Representative Hall's bill, because, you know, he's proposed it and he's in the supermajority, we thought maybe that might advance. But I think he may be getting messages from the forest industry folks saying, hey, that's not really a good idea, getting a little bit of pushback. And so advocates, HEC included, are out trying to encourage hearing on that bill. And if we don't get it on the House side, we'll work on the Senate side as well.
I see. So it's that he may withdraw it?
Or it may just not get a hearing. It may just not go anywhere. One thing that I'll just share with your listeners is that when we first compiled our list of bills to pay attention to that might have an environmental effect, there were 115 of them on our list. So there's no shortage of folks out there writing bills. It's just which ones are good or not, right?
Yeah, and I believe this year they're also limiting the number of bills that representatives can put forth.
Yeah, they typically tell them no more than 10. Last year during the short session, the Senate side said 5 and the House side said 10. That's sort of, I think, honored more in the breach than not. That is, if somebody of some persuasive authority decides to introduce 11 or 12, they get to. But if somebody is lower on the pecking order, they get slapped down. You were asking about, oh, this is the purchase of coal-fired generation facilities, 517.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, one of the big issues that HEC deals with is energy. What's the energy future of the state? We are opposed to this one because, as it says, creates barriers and additional approval steps for utilities retiring. Pretty much every year for the last couple of years, somebody has introduced a bill like this one that makes it harder for utilities to make their own business decisions, often which are to close or retire coal-fired plants, because they're just, it's one of the most expensive forms of energy production, short of nuclear energy these days. And so utilities are rightfully making decisions to close them down. And there's some folks who are so pro-coal that they just don't want the utilities to have that option.
And so another one that you oppose is SB 349, environmental remediation.
Yeah, this one is certain contaminated sites that are cleaned up to a degree. Often the IDEM, the Indiana Department of Environmental Management, says, look, you need to put a covenant that's recorded on the deed for that property to tell people in the future who might use or buy or lease that property that there's prior contamination that may still linger. In other words, it's cleaned up to a certain level that's acceptable, but it's still got some contamination. This bill would say to IDEM, you can't put those environmental covenants on in certain circumstances. And we think that's bad because we think that future owners or users or persons who rent or lease that ground ought to have some record they can look to determine if it's a safe place for them to do their activity. I mean, if you found out that your favorite restaurant in Bloomington was actually sitting on a Superfund site and the owners didn't know it because there's no environmental covenant, you would probably move your business or you move your consumption, your food consumption elsewhere, right?
Yeah, and I guess that would be the reason they wouldn't want it there, so that the restaurant would locate on there.
Right. So if I'm a restaurant owner, I'm looking for a place to build my new sandwich shop. I can look at the record right now. I can look at the deed. And if it's got an environmental restrictive covenant, then I make a different decision. If it has nothing and I don't know the history, then I might make a mistake.
I think that may actually apply right now to Bloomington with the PCB contamination that may be more toward private properties rather than a business. I think there has been an issue with some people finding that out and going, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah. Like, you know, daycare centers, you want to open up a daycare center or that kind of thing, and you want to know that it's safe.
And speaking of which, one of the bills you support or promoting is SB 330 to do with school air quality testing.
Right. This is a really sensible bill that says, directs the Department of Health to conduct surveys or testing in all schools in the state to determine the air quality. And that just seems to make a lot of sense. And unfortunately, that bill likely is not going to get a hearing either.
It did get its first reading to the Committee on Health and Provider Services, but you don't think it's getting anywhere?
Right, right.
How about this one then? HB 1366, one you support to do with so-called PFAS chemicals, forever chemicals, PFAS.
Yeah. There's about four bills out there that have been proposed regarding PFAS, and none of them are so far have gotten a hearing. This one is by, I think, Representative Becky Cash, and it actually is pretty sensible. It would...
This one's Representative Ryan Dvorak.
Oh, Dvorak. This is Dvorak, right. Okay. So, and there's one by Representative Maureen Bauer and another one by Becky Cash. And they're all sensible because our main issue on these past bills that have been introduced about PFAS is that they try to define PFAS chemicals so narrowly that regulation of the larger family of these forever chemicals is prohibited.
And so, it also is only talking about establishing a maximum contaminant level in public water rather than none being in the public water.
Right, right. There, it ought to be none. And PFAS, as you may know, is one of those families of chemicals that the amount, the tiny, tiny amount that's in water is still unacceptable.
Yeah, and they call them forever chemicals because they don't break down forever and they are patented molecules. So you can tell exactly who produced them.
Or maybe somebody doesn't want to know who produced it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you put them on the list, then that's putting them on the list.
Right.
So we have another one to do with the PFAS forever chemicals. That's HB 1553 biosolids testing that you guys support.
Right. That's Representative Maureen Bowers' offering on PFAS. And basically what it does is direct that sometimes the end product of wastewater treatment is biosolids. A lot of cities use those biosolids in their own their own leaf litter and other work. And a lot of times people either buy or pick up those biosolids from their city. If they contain PFAS and they put them on their backyard garden, that's not a good thing. So
and it used to be spread on farmland, or is it still?
It's still in some places spread on farmland, and we want to be sure that the biosolids are being tested together with industrial waste products, and that it's to a standard that's really small. In this case, no more than 100,000 parts per trillion, pretty small measure, and that there be some sort of a registry or notice regarding who's releasing these PFASs. Say the landowners know whether, that the biosolids they might be using are safe.
Well, and I notice it seems to say that it's a higher standard than the EPA of 4 parts per trillion. So I know there are sometimes bills or measures put forth, or it seems like maybe there was something here in Indiana about not exceeding federal standards.
Yeah, there's back in, I think it was 2023 and before that, 2021, there's this concept called No More Stringent Than, a bill that passed some years ago, again, basically said, IDEM, you cannot regulate anything more stringently than the federal government does. That's kind of a big hurdle a lot of times, because sometimes the federal government's levels are not as protective as the state might want to be.
Yeah, putting a floor on it.
Yeah.
So another one that you guys support is SB 307. That's Environmental Waste Inventory and Grant Program due with brownfields.
Right. In this case, it's I think this is Senator Zay's bill, and what he's trying to do there is to say, where are the brownfields? Let's get a comprehensive and up-to-date list of former industrial sites that are contaminated, called brownfields, that could be inventoried, and then we could have a basic strategy going forward about how those brownfields might be used again, for example, for solar installations or some other energy production, like battery storage or something. So that bill has actually passed the Senate, and so will be considered. It passed on the 3rd just this week, and it's going to be considered by the House after the break.
Okay. And as you said, there are a few to do with PFAS. Apparently another one you support is HB 1286, PFAS.
Yeah.
Becky Cash.
Yeah, this is the more kind of a comprehensive bill. And so this would create a registry, who's producing PFAS, manufacturers or otherwise, and it would sort of begin to track where these chemicals are coming from. And provide some transparency to the public in terms of quantity and, again, who's producing them. One thing that we like about this bill is that it has a more expansive definition of PFAS, one that's more widely accepted internationally and by the EPA versus the narrow one that the Chemical Association is putting forward.
And I noticed that some of the problems, health outcomes that you guys mentioned that it affects is cancer, thyroid and liver problems, and issues with fertility and childhood development. I have had thyroid problems at this point, and it's actually a lot more widespread than people know. It affects women more, but
right. So and to your point, there's so many, these chemicals are so pervasive in things that they don't even need to be used for. Like, if you get a paper plate at a picnic that's got some shiny surface on it, it's got PFAS. It doesn't need to be there. But it's pervasive, and it's in everybody's bodies, and obviously it affects some people more darkly than others.
Yeah, and it's on the old Teflon pans, apparently.
Absolutely. Just watch Dark Waters. Just look that one up. But actually, what you ought to watch, and we link to it there, is a recording of a program that HEC did. That's actually two of them. They have some Purdue scientists explaining a little bit more technically than I could what PFAS is and where it's found and why it is not good for us.
What's another bill that you guys have that you're opposing?
Well, let's see. Let me mention one that we are supporting. That's the, and then I'll go to the oppose. Mm-hmm. HB 1234, Conservation of Agriculture Farmland. One of the issues that's been identified in the last couple of years is loss of farmland, which frankly is mainly as a result of residential development. But a lot of farmers are interested in keeping their land in agriculture production for the next generation. And this bill would provide the state the ability through the Department of Agriculture to accept conservation easements, agricultural conservation easements, which would be a way for a farmer, for example, to protect his land from development with that easement and pass it on more easily to either a new farmer or maybe the next generation. And that's a bill that we support. It got approved by the committee that first heard it, and then it was sent over to Ways and Means, which is sort of the budget people of the House. And we're still hoping that this gets out of the House and can be considered in the Senate.
So does that allow for the farmer to be either paid or get their taxes abated for those easements so that it's not necessarily in production, but it's not just fallow?
Essentially, what the farmer's doing is selling his development rights. So it does reduce the current value of the property because if I can sell it to a developer for $30,000 an acre versus $10,000 an acre, I could make more money today. But if I've created an easement and sold my development rights, the land is still going to be increasing in value as agriculture land, but it's going to reduce my taxes because it's not going to be valued as high. And it's a strong preservation tool. It reduces some of the incentive for some folks to just sell their land to the highest bidder because they feel like they've got no other choice.
And before we go to another oppose, I see another support one you have is SB 422, Advanced Transmission Technologies, Grid Enhancing Technologies, GETs.
Yeah. So on that one, the idea is we want to make the grid as accessible as possible for community solar and for smaller energy production facilities. And advanced technology is a way to better manage the grid system. And I'm not a utility expert at all, but the idea is that, you want to be able to put new load onto an existing grid. And you can do that by managing the flow of electrons a little better. And this bill promotes that idea.
So yeah, that facilitates more local production. I know that the Solar for All program federally has just been capped or nixed by the Trump administration. And that was supposed to help a million low-income homes to solarize. And you'd need this type of technology to,
you would
get a neighborhood to pipe their stuff onto the grid.
Right.
And then that affects community solar as well, to where that's still currently prohibited, right?
Right. That's something that we in the environmental community are trying to do, is to say, look, right now the cheapest form of immediately available of electricity is in the form of renewables like solar and wind. We just can't get on the grid because General Assembly is promoting continued fossil fuels. And so just let us compete and people will buy it because it's cheaper and they won't be forced to pay the cost of development of something that might be 15 or never down the road, which is small modular nuclear reactors.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people may not yet understand, is that these renewables have actually become cheaper than the fossil fuels. Didn't used to be the case, but all the measures over the years, it's now the cheaper option. So it seems a bit of a market protectionism to block that out and just go for the drill, baby, drill.
It is. And some even of the major utilities are talking about renewables, and they like utility scale, large scale renewables, and they don't want to be messing with the small stuff, but they're going to have to go that way at some point. And they better start figuring it out right now and being helpful in that regard.
Well, and that's some of the projects that get blocked, is the big centralized solar farms and wind farms. Whereas if you have these community solar setups where it's a neighborhood, the rooftops, kind of more cooperative, then that's not going to get the same kind of opposition and should actually get a lot more enthusiasm when a neighbor can overproduce and just share it with the next door neighbor.
Exactly. I mean, that's the essence of community, isn't it?
And speaking of these energy issues, one that you oppose, or I guess it's three different bills, HB 1007, SB 424, SB 423, all having to do with small modular nuclear reactors.
Yeah, and these bills do different things. The most comprehensive of the three you mentioned is SB 1007. That has a lot of moving parts to it, but essentially it's to pave the way for IURC to consider proposals for small nuclear reactors, small modular nuclear reactors, and also to kind of consolidate the power to approve them, to review and approve them in the IURC, which state, and to kind of abrogate or cut off the ability of local zoning and other controls to make those things happen. And then the other two bills that you mentioned, the 324 and 25, those are, I think, insidious, because what they do is they say that investors and utilities and others who are thinking about small modular nuclear reactors and doing planning and all that can charge off those fees to utility consumers, even if the plant never gets built. So they're basically shifting the risk of investment in this as yet unproven technology to the consumers. And part of the idea of the utility monopoly world is that you and I should be paying for service, not for investment, not for planning and thinking about things. That should be a risk borne by corporate world and not passed on to us.
Yeah, another way that corporations are externalizing their costs, privatizing them to us.
Right.
And those bills, those other two bills were actually SB 424 and SB 423.
23 and 24. I think I added another one, 25. 23 and 24, thanks.
And SMRs is the short term for those small modular reactors.
Correct. Which, by the way, I think we point out there's none operating in the United States of America, except somebody might argue they are operating on Navy ships somewhere, but none for utility work.
And so are those moving forward? I see an update that says they passed the Utilities Committee on January 23rd, were considered by the full Senate on a third reading on February 3rd.
Yeah, and they passed. So all three of those bills passed this week, the Senate.
And so another one authored by our very own Senator Shelley Yoder, Democrat of District 40, is SB 321, Designated Wild Areas. Did you touch on that one earlier?
I did, and I just misstated its number. It's 321. That's the one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that one is more specific. If you read the bill, it basically identifies very specifically within state forests what large areas should be set aside. The bill calls them wild areas, but the idea is to restrict what can happen in those areas, like to restrict logging.
Mm-hmm. Another one that HEC supports is SB 121, destructive minnow fishing.
Yeah, that one is a very interesting one. It turns out that some folks are using gill nets and seine nets and completely harvesting all the fish from certain streams and eating them or using them for food. And so the typical hook and line fishermen might take a few minnows from a stream and use that as bait fish, but they've discovered over the last few years that some people are taking nets and just basically harvesting all the fish and sometimes eating them on the spot with family members or sometimes taking them home. And so it's depleting. It's having a very negative ecological effect on these streams. And so the idea of this bill is to restrict the use of nets on Indiana streams.
Well, I guess those minnows would be a little lower in the food chain and have less bioaccumulation, but aren't there still advisories not to be eating wild-caught fish because of mercury from the coal plants and things like that that build up in the tissues, especially as you go up the food chain?
Right. And because of the way the fishing is happening, just all kinds of, bottom fish as well as minnows. We shorthanded it to minnow fishing here, but a lot of different fish are being eaten that probably shouldn't be eaten in great quantities, at least.
Another one you guys are pro is SB 277, Indiana Grown Produce for Students Program. also by Shelley Yoder.
Right, right. And that just allows, sets up a fund to allow schools to purchase more locally some of the food and to feed it to their students. There's a lot of good salutary effects there. One is students learn that food actually doesn't come from the grocery store. It comes from local farms, and it could come from local farms, and that it actually tastes better, more nutritious and so forth. I know I live up in Fort Wayne, and a couple of the Fort Wayne community schools did kind of a pilot program this last year that was wildly popular among the students. You know, they would buy local sweet corn and cook it up and some other local produce that, and this would be a way to sort of generalize that throughout the state.
Yeah, and you can change an entire life trajectory by getting the kids oriented to the taste, the sensations, and just, yeah, the origin, because in almost all those programs, when they first get the urban kids in there, they're like amazed that, or they at least thought it came off of trees or something like
that. And, you know, and it's not just urban kids. I mean, just think of the food you ate growing up in the cafeteria.
rectangular pizza.
Beets, those little square things that come out of a can, right? No, that's not a beet.
And another one is SB 256, one that you support. Addresses groundwater, and that's authored by Senator Spencer Deary of District 23.
Right. Senator Deary is over by Lafayette, and of course, one of the controversies that erupted over the last couple of years is this LEAP project that was the brainchild of the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, and they purchased about 10,000 acres, and Lilly is already building investing quite a bit of money and building a plant there. And the idea was to have a very robust bioengineering and other high-tech kind of campus there. But they discovered they didn't have enough water in Boone County by Lebanon. And so they thought they would just build a pipe and pull the water from the Wabash River and the aquifer beneath the Wabash River. And Senator Deary was alarmed by that, and so he introduced a bill last year and again this year to let's take a look at this. Let's create a task force and look hard at our groundwater resources and before we start moving groundwater around the state for economic development, let's find out what we've got and what are the best methodologies there.
Yeah.
So that's what we'd do here.
And he's a Republican, and that whole issue with the LEAP pipeline has kind of activated people from the right for some of these environmental concerns and things like their wells going dry from draining that aquifer.
Right. And then I think I actually heard some testimony this week where some folks are really concerned about, you know, private property interests, not just the water in their wells, but also, you know, condemnation, you know, eminent domain kinds of issues like, why take my property to build a pipeline for the benefit of somebody a few counties away? And so there's a lot of issues here that need to be studied and thought through before we just start moving huge volumes of water around.
And those high-tech industries, once they're built, tend to not employ very many people.
Right. The construction phase might have a bunch of people, but the operation of, you know, a data center or, you know, that kind of thing is not a high.
So it's less jobs creation and more just money for that corporation.
Right.
And another one to do with water is SB 211. You guys support this one. It's the Clean Water Indiana program. That's authored by Senator Susan Glick, also Republican. Senator Gene Lysing, Republican.
It's, yeah, Lysing, right.
And Senator Brett Clark,
right.
Republicans.
Right. And here the idea is to take some of the money that comes into the Indiana Water Fund, Clean Water Indiana Fund, and use some of that money to help fund invasive eradication, invasive plant species eradication, which is a continuing problem in the state, a lot of invasive plant species. And so it just shifts some money for that work. There's a lot of good work being done by county by county, I think, by local invasive species control organizations, and this would provide some funding for that. And this passed the Senate and will be considered in the House.
Mm-hmm. So the community solar that we mentioned earlier is a bill you support, or two bills. That's SB 541 and HB 1581.
Right. And interestingly, Senator Spencer is, I think, was new to the General Assembly this year, and authored 340 or 541. And Kerry Hamilton from Indianapolis authored 1581. And Representative Hamilton has offered this a couple times before, but the idea is to try to get the authority to have community solar. And that would be, those are facilities that basically controlled not by utilities, but by members of the community. And it's like a subscription service. So I've got a building that's suitable for solar panels. Maybe your house is not suitable, or you're a renter, so you don't have the authority, but you can use, by subscribing to the energy I produce off my large building roof, you can use that energy in proximity with your other neighbors. And that is so far not something that's favored by the state, but something we think is ultimately and invariably sensible for communities to do.
Yeah, like the Solar for All at the national level, that provides major savings for these low-income households that was designated for, and you're talking about 5 to 20% off the energy bills for people with this community solar situation. So that's directly increasing the cost of living for people by not allowing this community solar, and not allowing solar for all, and making them buy from the industries that are charging them more.
Right. And as you know, we, a few years ago under, I think, Governor Daniels, we got rid of net metering. Actually, I think it finally petered out under Governor Holcomb. But, you know, that was another way to encourage solar production and also to get people assistance on their energy costs. And that was, again, disfavored by the utility-oriented General Assembly.
Well, they're interested in Wall Street circles on diversifying their portfolios, but they seem to not, again, sort of selectively apply these principles.
Right. Perhaps the only diversity that they're interested in, right?
So another that you guys are against is SB 254, biofuel tax credits. That's Senator Brian Buchanan, District 7.
Yeah, and there are a couple bills, and they're kind of perennial bills as well. And the idea, of course, is that we shouldn't be growing energy-intensive and chemical-intensive corn to be turned into fuel for our cars. And that's really what providing additional tax credits to biofuels does.
Essentially a boondoggle for the farm lobby while creating more carbon than is being offset.
Yes. Exactly. And we, it's, you know, it's not in our bill watch, but HEC highlighted a report that came out this past year, 2024, about the biofuel industry and how much hazardous air pollution they produce in the process of turning corn into, you know, fuel. And it's a pretty significant amount in the Midwest. So again, this is not a good, it's not good for people's health. It's not good for a sound energy economy in the future.
Yeah, and there's some issues with that corn and the corn syrup going into people's diet. And if that gets pushed back a little bit, maybe they'll have to rely even more on these ethanol scenarios. HB 1286 is another one that's on the PFAS chemicals that you support. I guess maybe these bills weren't consolidated, maybe to give each provision a better chance of getting through, but it seems like with the limited number of bills, maybe some of these could have been consolidated.
Yeah, and actually, it's funny you mention that, because there is some talk this week about trying to consolidate some of the issues from the various bills into one bill, give it a better chance of moving forward. You know, that's in discussion, but I, you know, aside from, I don't know the details yet.
And this HB 1286.
Again, it's a registry. IDEM would keep a registry of discharges of PFAS, you know, where it's discharged, the quantity, make that publicly available. Again, trying to understand the level of the of the volume that's produced and where it's coming from, so we can get a handle on it for future regulation.
And again, that seems to be something that's directly empowering the public and, like you said, things like businesses to consider where they're going to place their businesses and landowners' issues.
So, right. And for the consuming public to also to figure out what, you know, which industries are producing PFAS and do you want to support them anymore with your dollars?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to apply pressure for them to change their methodologies or how they produce their product?
Yeah, boycott, divest, or target the shareholders board. One that you're neutral on, may explain what it is about neutrality or with you guys, SB 134, Water Management Authority.
Yeah, and I think the reason we came out neutral on this one is that it gets to a problem that HEC recognizes exists, which is that we don't have a statewide water management plan. And it also tries to address that by sort of dividing the state up into sensible hydrological regions. It is something that we, I think, know is not going to go anywhere because it was authored by a Democrat, J.D. Ford, and we're not sure it really hits all the, you know, it may be too narrow a bill. We think we need a bigger, more comprehensive bill. But it's, you know, we think there's value in bills like this appearing so that people can start talking and have discussions, and knowing that it's not going to go anywhere, we came out neutral on it.
And another one you are for is SB 193, and it's to do with annual inspections of CFOs, otherwise known as CAFOs. Here it's just called confined feeding operation rather than confined animal feeding operation.
Right. And there's I think 1,651 of those in the state of Indiana. And they're large, you know, animal feeding operations, whether we're talking dairy cattle, ducks, chickens, pork, those are the big ones. And Senator Niemeyer, who's up from the region area, he is, while saying that these CAFOs are doing generally a good job of monitoring their manure, he wanted there to be some assurances to neighboring landowners that things were operating as they should be under the permits. This bill actually got amended, and instead of annual inspections, the amendment basically calls for one inspection between the building of the CAFO and the 5-year renewal of its permit. So it adds one more inspection time that IDEM would do. And the idea would be to, again, assure neighboring landowners that the operation is doing what it's supposed to do under its permit. That actually did pass the Senate. And so it'll be heard by the House in some form next month in March. And we're supporting that because we think anything that provides more transparency to these factory farms would be useful to consumers and protective of the environment.
And again, that's another one advanced by a Republican that you guys are for. You aren't just backing the whatever the Democrat.
Right. Well, we have to be pragmatic. We have to think about what's a good policy and what can be accomplished.
One that you oppose being SB 178, natural gas as a clean energy resource.
Yeah, this one is actually going to pass the Senate as well. I think it's up for floor consideration on the Senate floor next week. It's a little bit like Big Brother. Why are we calling a fossil fuel clean energy? But as others have pointed out to me, and the current state of definitions in our state law has things like coal gasification quantified as clean energy, and coal gas as clean energy. So it's sort of a kind of a futile effort to say we're opposing it because there's already worse things identified as clean energy in our statute. But honestly, as a measure of let's use words the way they ought to be used, we don't think natural gas which is basically methane, which is 50 to 80 times more damaging to the environment, to climate change issues, greenhouse gas issues, is something that we can call clean energy.
Yeah, it doesn't quite last as long, but has more intense effect on the front end, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think our write-up says 35 times stronger. I've read up to 80 times stronger. It depends how you're measuring it, I think.
And then, yeah, the methane leaks that occur along that process.
Right. One of the issues that is fascinating to me, but also scary for the environment, is that a lot of times the measurement of what is, you know, what are the releases of greenhouse gases from natural gas use excludes its extraction from the ground in the first place. So all the methane that's released in the fracking and the other extraction methods is not counted against it, so to speak.
Yeah, and I've seen some of the footage with the certain type of sensor cameras that normally is not visible, but there is a type of sensor camera where it shows the methane as black, and that I don't think that's regularly done on these, you know, systems of moving it around. And so that's a whole metric that isn't really necessarily being gauged
exactly
in the overall impact. So I think that's the extent of the list of what you guys have on the Bill Watch. Is there anything, any of the others or some of those that never got out that you lament and wish had? Or
Well, yeah, we update this every week, and we haven't had our decisions yet this week. That's going to come out next Tuesday. But one thing that's not on here, but that was in our e-newsletter that comes out weekly as well, is just conservation funding. The budget bill is HB 1001, and you know, it will pass. There'll be a budget that's proposed by the House, and then that'll be considered by the Senate in the last half of the session. And HEC is always proposing additional funding for conservation things. For example, the current budget proposal has $0 for the President Benjamin Harrison Trust, which is the fund that has fees in it, you know, the environmental license plate, but that's only about $200,000 a year. In the past, there's been $10 or $15 million placed into that fund by past budgets, and that's used by the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Nature Preserves, to purchase and protect sensitive areas. Local land trusts like Sycamore down in Bloomington and Acres up where I live use that money to buy and protect land. So we're asking the General Assembly to put in $15 million for the Harrison Trust, and right now there's zero. So there's, if somebody wants to look more deeply, they can take a look at HEC's e-news, and that's going to have a number of other dollar figures for recommendations for the conservation funding.
And that would be accessed by your website?
Right, through the website.
Yeah, hecweb.org. I wasn't able to find anything on the bill that didn't advance that you guys have labeled as sustainable economy. Did it have something to do with like circular economy or something like that?
I'm wondering, every once in a while on our website, something gets left there that might be older. Let me take a look real quick.
I mean, that's the most interesting, one of the most interesting sounds.
Yeah, that'd be more interesting, wouldn't it?
If we were advancing something,
the circular economy,
sustainable economy in some sense, you know, because that's always been the dichotomy, thinking that it's one or the other. And so if you could demonstrate that one feeds into the other.
Yeah, I think that may be something we need to fix in our website. Thanks for pointing that out, because I don't think there's any bills this year having to do with a circular economy that are going anywhere. So I'll fix that. Thanks.
Or just maybe some other kind of a thing like urban farms as a form of entrepreneurial advancement and food deserts, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there are a couple of bills that we didn't put on our list here having to do with assisting urban farmers, and they may be getting some traction. Let me look at my list here real quick.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to find out, because that's one of the neglected areas that there's such potential in.
It is. And, you know, I think that's something that's on a scale that a lot of people can relate to and grab hold of, right?
Yep. For health and, you know, food security and food sovereignty.
Right.
Especially as the price of everything has gone up.
Right.
And if you have something in the neighborhood.
If you had your own backyard chickens, you wouldn't have to worry about bird flu and the cost of eggs, would you?
Oh, you still might, but yeah, you have a little bit of a
less so, right?
Cul-de-sac of some eggs for a while, at least.
Yeah, there's a bill, SB 14. It's called Right to Food, introduced by Blake Doria, Senator Doria, and it's basically the idea that people should have the right to grow and eat their own food, and it shouldn't be messed with by agribusiness or something.
Or HOA.
Or the HOA. Although this bill kind of waffles a little bit about HOA restrictions. But the idea, the sentiment of it is a good one. That's one that's, we didn't really follow that very, very closely.
My landlord doesn't want me to garden my yard.
Yeah. I know I had when my mother was alive, she and my dad rented a place and she had one tomato plant. And the landlord came by and said, "Hey, you can't have that." And she said, "I'm going to keep it. Don't take my tomatoes." He didn't bother her after that. But
what was that, SB 14?
14, yeah. I thought there was another one. Let me look here.
And, you know, this will be archived for people so that they can follow up on these things and put their two cents in with their representative.
No, that's great. I wish they would. And I hope they will, right? There's a bill that would provide tax credits to retiring farmers for transferring their land to a new farmer, somebody who is new to farming. That one's HB 1191. It's called the Retiring Farmer Tax Credit, introduced by Republican Kenneth Culp. That one isn't going anywhere, but it's a good idea to try to encourage people to pass on their farm, get a tax credit for it versus selling it to development. So that's a good one.
And yeah, these last few haven't been weighed in on by the HEC, but David.
No, but we have to sort of pick and choose, right? Mm-hmm. Well, one that we haven't talked about that's kind of an interesting bill is HB 1436, which is a bill that would allow counties that pass an ordinance to collect an extra dollar fee from people going into state parks that are in that county. So say Brown County, for example. So everybody going to Brown County and paying a fee would pay an extra dollar that would go to the Brown County General Fund to be used to offset extra, you know, emergency first responder kind of costs in the county. That bill has actually had some legs and is going to probably pass out of the House and be considered by the Senate. The idea being that, you know, if a county has a lot of land that's state land, it doesn't get tax revenues from that land. And the tax revenues are what support ambulance services, for example, volunteer fire departments. And so the idea is to generate a little bit more income to the county from an extra fee for all the users. So that one, you know, we haven't really, you know, we supported generally, but we didn't testify or anything on that.
Yeah, the USDA recently, they've scrubbed all the mention of climate change off of the USDA sites that, you know, basically they had said that there are going to be impacts on food quality availability from climate change, but now that language is being scrubbed. I don't know if there was anything, I guess we mentioned a couple of kind of land conservation agricultural bills earlier, but I didn't quite hear anything about like regenerative agriculture or impacts on climate change being a part of that.
Yeah, there really aren't any bills that overtly support regenerative agriculture, and nor are there bills, thankfully, that try to do on a state level what the administration is doing on the federal level, which is to eliminate any conversation about climate change and that sort of thing. Frankly, I think people are smart enough to know that something's happening, something's amiss, but it is unfortunate that we're going to try to put our heads in the sand again on that issue.
Yeah, and one of the stages along the way, besides just denial, was the acknowledgement that there is climate change, but that they just didn't believe it was human caused. So if they scrubbed any mention of climate change, they'd kind of be going against their own affirmation.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Right. Well, we wouldn't want to quit burning fossil fuels, would we? That's the thought, you know. If you acknowledge that it's human caused, then you have to do something about it.
Liquid gold. Liquid golden age.
Are you from another, or from the past, that you also narrated those wonderful videos that we saw when we were kids?
Well, what's old is new again under current administration, returning to the Gilded Age more than the Golden Age. But
yeah, and some people, and I don't disagree with them, think he's taking us back to the 1850s, not just the 1950s, right?
Mm-hmm. And that late 1800s, really what's referred
yeah,
to.
Yeah, late 1800s. There
Gilded
we go.
Age. Slipping into the early 20th century, and we're kind of in the roaring 20s and resetting everything to pre-FDR conditions. And all of this stuff would seemingly fall under the vague term that was in the funding freeze of Green New Deal, or by the press secretary, Green New Scam.
Yeah, if it would be amusing if it weren't so deadly serious.
Yeah, laugh to keep from crying.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, unless there's anything else you want to add about the activities or anything coming up, but we've got Earth Day not too far around the corner. I imagine you guys are doing something for that.
Yeah, we'll be out at various events, probably in Bloomington and in Indianapolis area. And I know there's a EcoFest during that month up here in Fort Wayne that HEC will be at. February 19th is what we call Conservation Day at the State House. I would encourage people to, you know, come up, and there'll be events in the State House, and we're going to try to get legislators to stop by and have conversations with their constituents who are there, and you know, with the various advocacy groups that work in the State House regularly. So that's February 19th, starting at 9 a.m, going probably to about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Typically, that's going to be on the fourth floor of the State House. I would encourage people who are listening to go up there on that day. And it's a good opportunity to talk to some of your state reps and senators, especially if you call them in advance, say, hey, I'm going to be at Conservation Day. Would you stop by? And I want to talk to you. And they'll do it.
Well, great. Thank you for being with us and informing the general citizenry about what they're cooking up there in the State House, and positives, negatives, or neutral stance that you guys have. People can look up the Bill Watch at the website of hecweb.org.
Right.
So thank
and
you.
And that'll change weekly. And so I encourage people to keep looking at that, and also to take action. If they read something that trips their trigger and they say, look, well, I'm going to call my representative on this because I think it's important, please do so. We've got tools on the website to help you do that.
Great. Thank you, David.
All right. Thank you. Good to talk to you.